Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Walks of Life podcast. My name is Krithat Srinivasan. I am your host of this podcast series. My guest today on the podcast is Sri Rupa Sengupta, who is the Director of Public Health Communications at an NGO that is based out of Bangalore. Now, what is public health communication? That is something we're going to find out through this episode. I wanted to really sit down with her and try to understand the roles of non-profit organizations in the country, because I had this thought where if you have non-profit organizations which are doing all the work in the country, then what is the government doing? So there is a lot of doubts that were cleared through this podcast, which I think might be very interesting to somebody who's always seen the downside of the country but never really known how to fix things and how essential communication really is in tackling these problems. So it was a very fun conversation that I had with her. Got a little emotional towards the end, but I think that's what life is. So give it a listen. If you like it, then do drop me a message. Let me know what you think. This is another episode of the Walks of Life podcast. My name is Krithat Srinivasan. Right, welcome to episode number, I don't know what this is. This happens every time, I don't know why. Like, I never know which episode number I'm recording. But yeah, welcome to another episode. And with me today is Sri Rupa. Hi, Sri Rupa.
Hi, Krithat.
It's so weird to do that hi, hello at the beginning of the podcast. Sri Rupa is a friend of mine. We've known each other for 6 years?
Yeah.
6 years-ish?
More or less, yeah.
6 years-ish. Of course, I met her through because of stand-up, like most of my guests. And we never spoke about stand-up on any of my podcasts. And not today also. Sri Rupa, we're going to talk about like the world of like public health and how communication influences public health, because that's what you work in. But before we jump into any of that, for somebody who doesn't know Sri Rupa Sengupta, how would you describe yourself and your work like to an aam janta?
So, wow.
Googly.
Yeah, clearly. No, so describe myself. I would say I'm someone who believes in moving into every moment with heart first.
Right.
And everything else second.
Uh-huh.
So I usually like step in.
Emotional dominant.
Yeah, totally.
Very good.
And I wear my heart on my sleeve.
Uh-huh.
And which is what gets me in trouble most of the time. But right. It also is a very rewarding experience because that way you connect with people much better. And
also maybe helps ton because of the work you do.
Absolutely, absolutely. Right. So about the work that I do, I am an associate director at this nonprofit called Swasthi Health Catalyst. We work across 30 countries, including India.
Mm-hmm.
And I lead the communications portfolio, which is a public health communications portfolio.
Right.
So my work entails communicating about public health internally, which is with communities that we work with. Through the media to kind of flag issues and concerns that people uh-huh. need to know, not just about health, so but also social determinants.
So you raise these concerns to the government or like you just educate the masses about them?
Both actually. So I also work at a policy level, mm-hmm. which basically means that you raise the concerns which are happening on the ground for advocacy. So for policy change to make right. it more
for
sensitive.
For amendments or like to absolutely. Make sure they fit and actually have functional work
yeah.
happening
yeah.
that way.
Exactly, right? You know, right. because at the end of the day, systems should be working for people.
Correct.
And not the other way around.
Uh-huh, right.
So, and communication is a very important cog in that wheel because right. you might have a lot of technical strategy and all of that, but unless the people on the other side understand what they're working for, the work will actually not meet.
It won't go anywhere,
goal.
Mostly, totally. If you don't really know
totally.
What... And you primarily work in public health communication.
Yes.
Right. So when we say public health, what is public health?
So public health...
Is it just like aam janta ka health? Because that doesn't make... That's what the literal translation would mean.
Huh.
Also like if some city, say for example, if you... Is it a city-specific thing? Is it a person-specific thing?
It is... So, like in every other social development situation, you have a micro, meso and a macro. Right. A micro is an individual. It's a microcosm.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, Krithat, if there are health issues that you are facing, it will affect people around you.
Right.
Even if it is something that does not spread or is not contagious,
mm-hmm.
It will affect people in different ways.
True.
Right. Meso is basically a community setting. So,
okay.
for example, if you're staying in Yalanka, Yalanka as a community
will
is
be
a
affected.
Meso.
Yeah.
Is a meso level.
Right.
And the macro can be anything. But in this context, it can be Karnataka, it can be India and all of that.
It depends on what you put the scope to.
Exactly. Okay. So when we talk about public health, it also affects people in different ways. And there are two different sets, I don't want to use a medical term here, but you do have something which is called pathogenesis and there's something called salutogenesis.
Mm-hmm.
A pathogenesis is a way of looking at people's health through the study of pathogens or a very medical approach. Is the bacteria, what is the virus and all of that. Salutogenesis is overall health.
Right.
So for example...
Just general well-being.
Exactly.
Saf pani, clean house, enough toilets.
No stress.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
that
no
I
stress.
Never thought of. Okay.
Yeah. Emotional well-being.
Right.
Sleep. So, for example, sleep is the biggest part of your health.
Mm-hmm.
And how many of us follow it?
I mean, some people do too much, some people don't get any at all. Yeah. There is like a weird big gap there. So like I'll take your example itself. Like for example, if you said one area, you take an example of one area, see how I guess infrastructure is supporting good health or whatever. But like if I have to say a city X has great public health, what would that mean? Like, does that mean that place is extremely livable, or does that mean it's free of like diseases and stuff like that? Because We even brought in sleep and things like that.
Yeah. So see, a city with great public health would actually mean one where the systems are working. And when I say systems, I mean everything. You have the primary care, which is preventive and promotive. Promotive basically means that the people in the area know which health products to use.
Oh, okay.
To prevent illness.
Prevent a certain
illness.
For
example, water filters.
Right.
Right. So water filters can prevent diarrhea. And if diarrhea is left untreated, it can be a major cause of death, especially in children.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So then there is, of course, the secondary care, which is when you, that can be anything. It can be first aid. It can be a blood test to check if your levels are fine, especially HB levels.
Right.
Anemia is a big problem. Uh-huh. And anemia can cause intergenerational problems, especially mother to child.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, if your mother has anemia when you're being born, chances are you will be born with anemia. And the maternal mortality, which is basically death of mothers at childbirth, goes up because of anemia.
No.
So there are many implications there, right? And then, of course, you have the tertiary or even more detailed and sophisticated healthcare, which is where you have surgeries and all of that. Yeah?
Correct, which you need like establishments, hospitals, things like that.
Yeah.
But at a very basic level, even if you have like clean surroundings,
a clinic which is in a walking
basic
distance.
Basic education on
basic education of what we call as SBCC, right? That is social behavior change communication. So washing hands, for example, before you eat and after you eat.
Simple things like that people right now we think that it is like, obviously it makes sense to do that.
Yeah.
But somebody has to educate somebody about
it. True. And then good public health systems will also mean having great drainage in the city.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because that's where
that's where most of the problems start.
Absolutely. Good drainage, better sanitation. And did you know that one of the determinants of good health is also the way that we handle gender-based violence?
Gender-based?
Violence.
Violence, okay.
Yeah. So, for example, violence and abuse puts people at risk of health. And there are studies.
This is
risk of bad health. Like there are actually studies which have shown that.
So if you're talking about let's take a simple example of domestic violence in rural areas. You're saying that not only affects those two people, but also the entire ecosystem.
The entire ecosystem in the community. Because for example, if hypothetically, if it's a man who is violent towards a woman and that woman is his wife and they have children, that affects the child's mental health as well. And mental health, that leads to depression and physical illness, which is long-standing physical illness.
Oh God, that is so many parameters to fight.
There are multiple.
If you take a small community with just 10 houses, each house is dealing with its own set of mental and physical differences and problems.
These are all vulnerabilities.
Right.
And even financial security.
Right.
So if there again, there are a lot of studies which will prove it. And if anybody wants to say it, Google Scholar is a great resource base to understand this. If you don't have the money to meet your basic needs, chances are that you don't take primary care or preventive care seriously.
Right, because as that goes neglected, yes.
Exactly. So as a result of which, you have higher out-of-pocket expenses. And because you have higher out-of-pocket expenses at health, that pushes you further into poverty.
Oh, wow. This is such a weird web to be stuck in.
It is. And it's insane. And also, you don't take the right decisions because... Right.
Isn't that too many parameters to fight for anybody? So, like, it is. When it comes down to working for you, do you have departments? Do you have... Or do you take it... Like, is there a grassroots level that you can just attack it and just... stop everything
so
altogether?
Nothing, so that's the issue, right? It's a, when we talk about these concerns, there is no one solution.
Right.
You can't have a one-stop shop.
Yeah, I'm guessing you can't because it's how many have we listed already? I've lost count. Yeah.
Yeah. So the only way that you can have something, a semblance of a one-stop shop is if you can bring in social protection schemes of the government in a single window model, which is like you go to one place and you get... information about all the schemes which are there.
Like so Bangalore one for healthcare.
Something like that.
Right.
And you have that and you have financial literacy and financial packages along with preventive healthcare.
Okay.
So it's a combination. So when you ask me about departments, yes. There is health and well-being, which is a different department. There is financial literacy, which is a different department. There is social protection, which is a different dependent, and so on and so forth. And SBCC is another one, the one that I told you about earlier.
So there is quite a lot to do. And then, so do you go scout out for problems or how do you know what to fix first or how do you attack what?
So it depends a lot on it. A lot of it depends
on... Okay, let me give you like a practical example. Maybe that will help understand this better. Like say, for example, if you are at a village and you are there to solve problem A. Say, for example, sanitation. So there to solve that problem, only to realize that the problem that is causing this is something else entirely.
Yes.
And then you're, I don't know, is your campaign sidetracked? Is your...
No, so there's something called the root cause analysis, which typically, if you are in public health, you should be doing it for everything that you do. So, for example, if you look at, again, I'm just going to take the example of anemia because it's easier and we have already spoken about it. So if you do a screening or a risk assessment and you find there are 15 families in maybe 5 kilometer radius who are showing signs of anemia, it kind of gives you an idea saying that the problem is bigger than just a one-off, one woman missing her meal.
Correct. Okay.
Right. There's something bigger at play there. So you go digging, and then you might even find something like they're not getting the right nutritious vegetables. In that space.
Okay, so anything you grow there is as good as
water. Like, okay. So then you just get into the food and nutrition space. You do what it takes, essentially.
So you figure out what point A would be first before you...
Absolutely.
Don't go by... I guess nobody's going by just word in the air. Nobody's going by that.
There is always a mapping. There is something called a community mapping, which is basically a risk assessment, which is done by the community themselves.
Okay.
So there is self-reporting as well as medical reporting, which comes from the primary health units.
Yeah.
So they are the ones who say that, oh, you know what, this is what
there's
the data
a high
shows.
Density of this problem. Exactly. So let's attack that.
So I'll tell you a story. There's this place called Chikbalapur. I'm sure you know about it, right? Now, Chikbalapur was reporting a lot of people, individuals, families, children, coming to primary care units with body ache. It came from people from all walks of life. So whether they had like really strenuous work or whether it was something which... It was a desk job or something which looks very relaxed. Right?
Okay, correct. And everybody had the same complaint.
Yeah. And when we dug deeper, and especially our team, and that we went and tested everything, we figured out that the water in Chikbalapur has high fluoride content.
Okay.
Which is what was causing the body ache.
So it had nothing to do with
their
lack of exercise, their posture. It was none of those.
None of that.
It just as simple as water being contaminated.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So then the water plants were set up. And now you have water plants literally everywhere in Chikbalapur, which are which kind of work on the water and purify it.
Right.
And then we had to combine it with an SBCC initiative, which is a behavior change initiative.
Correct.
Because people were using water to to give it to their children, but they were not using it for cooking.
Ah.
Because they didn't want to buy that water for cooking. So they were still using the contaminated water.
So you have to educate them and tell them that this is not how it works.
Yeah. So you use that water for
like
everything.
Even even we stay in a metro and my mother is well educated and even she thinks that chai ke liye we can use tap ka pani because it's going to boil.
My mom says this.
Yeah, she's like, we can use tap water to make
which
tea.
Which actually makes sense in the times that probably that they grew up in because also the world was less contaminated.
Exactly. Like boiling water was enough to kill disease at that time. Right now, I'm guessing it's not as simple as boiling water.
It's crazy. And I think that's something that we are not accepting that across different sectors, we have to be more aware of climate change.
Uh-huh.
We have to be more aware of the fact that the earth is going for a toss.
Yes, of course.
And all of this makes
some of us are aware. Some of us are still believing that it's okay. Things will change. But when you talk about, say, your job in specific, which comes to public health communication, you said that you're kind of trying to figure out what these problems and blockages are in society right now. And then now you're trying to use communication to create a change, which involves getting implementation of new laws or amendment
of
existing.
That's part of it, yeah.
Right.
That's the advocacy
some stuff
part.
Like that. Now, I'm guessing all of this involves working with the government very closely.
Yes.
So what department of government do you mostly communicate with? And isn't that a really tough job? Just getting a affidavit about my license is lost is quite hard. So now I'm imagining trying to change public health situation completely through law changing.
So it's a combination, right?
Right.
The best way to ever get your point across is to get people talking about it.
Okay.
To get a multiplicity of people to take a pause and understand that this is not a problem of just one isolated individual family or community or space, but it belongs to all of us because we have that human connection.
Right.
We're all human beings. One of the things that, or rather I would say the major thing, the heart of the matter of what I do is to surface the real issues and echo it across different corridors. It can be government corridors, it can be media corridors, it can be even community corridors. Because there are times when the community will come to you saying that I am experiencing this.
Mm.
But you are the one who has the data to tell them that, hey,
this is the problem.
This is an issue that you might want to look at.
Yeah.
And then they identify the problem with you.
Yeah.
It's like a co-realization space.
Correct.
For the lack of a better
word. And now everybody has to do their
bit.
Yeah, everybody has to push their side of the
envelope. So when we all push that side of the envelope and when the common goal is a better life for all, great things can happen.
Yeah, but I'm guessing working with a government agency is going to be a little difficult. Trying to assume that there's already so much on their bucket.
So that's the thing. So it depends on where you couch it.
Right.
So for example, if you have a situation where you need, say, young people to be more aware of their surroundings. Yeah.
Hmm.
You would go to the Ministry of Youth.
Okay.
You don't go to the Ministry of Health.
Ah, okay.
So you need to know which department and which ministry it falls under. Not attack.
Yeah,
collaborate.
Attack in the sense, yeah.
So when because you work together with them, because it's their mandate too, right?
Oh, okay. So you're saying any improvement will also make them look good.
Absolutely. It's a win-win.
Yeah.
So
okay.
And at the end of the day, we always have to remember that it's never them versus us. It's always us.
Right.
And that's how you make collaborations.
But
happen.
Is that how it is or is that how we believe that it is?
It is.
It is actually like that? Because the government general in the country has a very bad reputation. We all know this, right? We're like sarkari job. trying to get government work done is the most painful. Everybody knows that.
I think it's also because there are too many systems and red tape and safeguards which has been put in place in the government for over years and for different reasons.
Uh-huh.
And to get anything done for the greater good, you have to build your case. And that's where public health communication plays a role.
Right.
So, for example, if you are going in with a discussion point with the government in any plenary session or any conference or even a one-to-one interaction with a minister, it is a public health communication space's job to make sure that the news travels before you on that issue.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah. So what happens is you're already building an environment.
Is it like which PR for public health? Would you call it that? Yeah.
You can absolutely call it that.
Yeah. Because that's the kind of the job of PR.
Yeah.
Where we're like, this is the news, we'll send it out, let the people know about it, and then the government also hears about it.
And the USP of public health communication is that it has a learning bit.
Okay.
So there is a learning language associated with public health communication. So you're not just telling people that this is what it is, but you're also saying that, hey, there's a trend.
Right.
There is a prediction possible. And this is where it can go.
It's multi-level. Like, as in, like, this could happen. This has happened. This is what you should do so it doesn't happen. Like, there's so much.
Exactly.
Yeah, that has to be communicated with.
Yes.
So you're saying that working with the agencies hasn't been that much of a roadblock yet. Then what has been?
I think the biggest roadblock has been in figuring out the language. And when I say language, I don't mean like Kannada, Tamil, Hindi, Bengali,
Korean,
not that language. But we are talking about something which is intrinsically very important to every human being, because at the end of the day, you live in your body.
Yeah.
Your body is your house. And we care about our families. We care about the people around us. And that's what makes a social fabric work, right? But I don't think we are taught as much as we should be taught about taking care of ourselves.
Okay.
We are not taught.
It's one textbook in science in school. That's it.
Yeah, it's just, and it's so difficult to get through that and break that barrier. Like to even convince, like I told you earlier, right? That even to convince people to use clean water to cook. Because this boiling would not kill it.
That needed an initiative by itself.
Yeah, it was like a huge initiative. It was not just a campaign. It went on for years.
Right.
And it's crazy difficult. It's also difficult when you're writing in the media, right?
Yeah.
We did multiple media sensitization workshops in partnership with a media firm we work with in order to kind of get through to editors and journalists about...
saying, hey, there's something about that you should talk about.
Yeah, and plus sensitive reporting.
Right.
And all of that. So you have to cut through so much of the noise.
Mm-hmm.
That is the difficult part. Even when you're working with the government, the cutting through the noise is the problem. Oh. Everywhere, it's just cutting through the noise.
So get me to one very interesting question that I have, which is if there are so many NGOs right now, I mean, of course, yours, the one you work with is one of them. Before this, when I was in college, I had interned with one NGO called Janagraha. So, and they work
lovely
on like
work.
I was doing some studies on the lands that they leased out through the government and how many of them are actually reaching the people, things like that. And if there's so much NGO work, like for example, so many non-profit organizations that are doing social work for upliftment of society, isn't that primarily the government's job in the first place? Like, why do people have to do this? Like, there's this organization called Ugly Indian.
Oh, yes, I've
Ugly
heard
Indian,
of them.
Right? Now, the Ugly Indian is a group of volunteers that go out and clean spots that have been dirty, that garbage has accumulated, or like the walls have been damaged, anything. If it's ugly, they clean it. Okay? And their campaign is that we have to accept that we are dirty. We dirty this, so it's our job to clean it. And the way I look at it is now everybody's going to... suddenly the citizens are doing all the work.
Okay.
And why? Where is the government in all of this?
It's a very cliched line, but I'm sure you've heard of it. It takes a village to raise a child. It's something like that in this sector, in the development sector. We, as a country, have... more and more people who are in need, the divide is bigger than it ever was. So you, the schism between the ultra poor and the upper classes, economically better off echelons of society, it's a wider schism.
Right.
I'm not saying that the government machinery is efficient. There's a lot to be desired. But what I'm also saying is that all of us need to kind of once in a while pick up our tab and pick up our socks. Because it'll never be enough.
You're saying the issue is so big that the government is almost like a tiny...
It is a partner.
Yeah.
But it'll never... I mean, it'll probably do things like maybe subsidize education. Or have a public distribution system. But at the end of the day, is the public distribution system working for the poor?
Mm-hmm.
That's our job to check.
Oh, okay.
Because
So we're more like how the media is supposed to be for the government?
Yes, the fourth pillar,
the
basically.
The fourth pillar, yes.
The fourth pillar.
Right.
So as individuals, we have to be the fourth pillar for the government because we elect them. It's a democracy.
Correct.
And also, you can look at yourself as an auditing agency.
Right.
As individuals, as communities. So when you see something is not working around you and you raise it, you have every right to raise it because you're the person paying the taxes.
Right.
You're the person electing the government. So it's like an agency where you go
like a fact
hey, you
check,
know what?
Like, hey, you didn't do this.
Yes. You're not doing your job. I can fix it now, but long term, we'll have to do something about it.
Ah, okay. So that's how it works.
Yeah.
Ah, that's very interesting. So what you're saying is that you need these social service departments and companies and NGOs to keep the government in check, but not to do the government's job. That's not what you're doing.
No, we are. So you collaborate, you give them, you do innovations, you become an external think tank.
Ah, okay.
So for example, again, I'll just give you an example, a quick story again. The organization that I work with, for example, has a flagship program. It's called Invest for Wellness, or I4V is what it's commonly called. It is a primary care initiative which looks at social determinants as well. It's a very comprehensive and it works out of like different settings. So there's an urban setting, there's a rural setting, there's a community setting. There is a school model kind of being developed and stuff like that. Yeah, it looks at everything. It looks at finances, it looks at social protection, looks at health. Whatever you can think of, it's looking at it.
Right.
Now, this is a model which is being tested out. It's a model which has been co-created by different community members. And some of the community members are people who have literally next to nothing. Like they live in sheds which are 8 by 8 feet.
Okay.
And they are climate change refugees, sort of. Because they left because there was drought in their village. They lost everything. They've come to Bangalore. They're doing whatever they can to make ends meet. They want their kids to be educated. It's that kind of a space, right?
Correct.
And we have something called social return on investment, which any public health person can tell you about. It's basically on looking at not just rupee value of what you invest, but the overall value.
Okay, right. So you get back in kind also.
Yeah, right. And so for example, for 1 rupee invested, how much is actually going to the hands of the community person?
Correct.
Through a social protection
scheme.
Might not
have to be like the 1 rupee going as 1 rupee, but like a book.
Yeah, a social protection scheme, financial literacy, savings.
Correct.
Something or the other, right? Mm. It's an entire basket or a bouquet of services. Now this model, continues to show results and once the modeling is done, we'll be ready for the government to take to scale.
Oh, okay.
So we are a development institution.
So you're fixing problems, finding solutions.
Finding solutions which has impact at scale.
Right.
Right. And then that is ready for governments and not just the Indian government.
Yeah.
Right. But different governments who are struggling in resource poor settings to find these solutions.
Okay.
Which is maybe they are not able to even test out given their machinery.
Correct. So now
so
you
have
substantial data to prove that this is a system that works.
Yes.
So why not make this the system?
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Damn,
so that's what a lot of nonprofits also do. They find the solutions and these solutions are then adapted into the policy and into the institutions. And that's where advocacy plays a huge role.
Because then there has to be like, you come halfway, I come halfway.
Yeah.
It can't just be like, hey, look, I found it.
Now you take it and run with it. I will not even tell you how to do it.
Yeah.
So you do everything.
Yeah, you have to pretty much like spoon feed them afterwards, I'm guessing.
Yeah, you bring them, you take them on that journey that this is what we did and this is how we found that this is the solution and this is how it can be taken forward. And you will have hiccups.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the hiccups that we foresee.
Correct.
And we will be around to help you. And that's the test of sustainability, right? We keep talking about sustainability, but what is sustainability?
Correct.
Is sustainability just handing it to you and running away? Or is sustainability teaching you to do what you need to do to remain sustained?
Right. For it to prolong itself.
Exactly.
A little better longer. Returns. Better happiness, yeah.
Better returns.
Correct. So like if you, now you have dedicated your day job or whatever you call this. This is what you do.
Yes.
Right? Now, of course, everybody can't do that. So a lot of people would want to do a little bit. Would not want to maybe put their entire day's efforts into this. So what would be a good step one for somebody like that?
I think a good step one, if you're asking me specifically for public health communication, would be stay informed about how to prevent illness. Mm-hmm. And I don't just mean washing your hands, but a lot of other things.
Right.
And enable people around you to follow that.
Right.
It's very simple, actually.
It's as simple as, so for example, if me telling the guy who cleans my car that he needs to stop wearing, I don't know, like those same clothes because that's not healthy.
Yes, that he needs to wash his clothes
exactly
every day. And yes, there has to be
So just tell one person around you, fix. Yeah. Okay. That's actually true.
And it's just like informing them and telling, because, you know, that's the thing in communication. You follow, or rather you adhere to things that you hear from people you trust.
Right.
And people you know.
Yeah.
So, for example, last mile communication in community spaces only works if somebody who they know, who is maybe a local outreach worker or a nurse that they know, or an Asha or an Anganwadi worker, or even their cousin comes and says that, hey, you know what?
This is how it should be done.
This works. I care about you.
Correct.
Listen.
Believability is quite important.
Exactly. The trust is very
important.
You can't
just walk into a village and be like, guys, you need to start washing your hands. They're like, oh, please, I don't care what you say.
Exactly. So if you can do that even for one person around you, you're doing a lot. If you can do it for more, why not?
Well, before we close, I have something that I have to ask you. When it comes down to communicating with a country of this scale, you mentioned earlier in our conversation, when you spoke about language and you said, I don't mean Hindi, English, Kannada, Tamil, but this time I'm actually trying to understand that, is because we have way too many languages.
Yeah.
And if somebody has to, I'm understanding, trying to work with a certain section of a community, then you have to learn that language, I'm guessing, a little bit. How else is there effective communication if you both are speaking completely different tongues? Like,
so
is that a problem ever?
So what I think, for me, it's worked well, because I use this one principle in public health communication, which is called co-creation.
Okay.
Which is basically where you sit down with the community, and it's also a part of human-centered design, where you kind of co-design everything for a community, with the community, and let them drive the conversation.
Right.
So when you do co-creation with a community member and the language that they speak, that is the language the communication develops in.
Okay.
So even if you're trying to hit that local media, so for example, when we did the Mohammadpur sanitation campaign, it would be okay if that paper clipping was from
Hindi.
Times of India. I mean, fine.
Okay.
But what was more effective is that we found out which are the newspapers being read in that area.
And then find those appropriate people. And
the journalists. And that's where my media work came into work.
Right.
Work with the journalists. Tell them this is an issue. Why don't you come with us? See what's happening.
Correct.
And
so the problem translates into different languages and then reaches people anyways.
Yes. And this is not like through a translating agency. You do it with the community, because the translating agency will never get a lingo right.
Correct. Okay.
They can only do the first level of translation. So for example, the way that I speak Bengali, or
like
the way
how we would
is
use Google
different.
Translate and it's all messed up. It might,
yes.
You don't want it to come across like that. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Right, so you were saying you speak Bengali?
No, so what I was saying is that the way that I speak Bengali is very different from how my mother speaks Bengali, or somebody else speaks Bengali.
So you're talking about like city-specific dialects, the terms they use.
The terms that they use.
Yeah.
Is it the keywords?
Right, true. Oh God, okay, cool, that's so interesting. But before we leave, before we wrap up, I have to ask you this. I ask all my guests this, like, why is it that you do what you do? Because everybody, when they do what they do, they have this one aha moment. Right? When they're working, or it could be like some change that you were able to make, some moment at your job, something that made you realize, oh, wait, this is why I'm here, or this is why I like doing this. This is why you're still stuck around. Do you have any story like that you want to tell us? Us.
Us sounds
good.
Yeah,
tell us.
So it's not a very happy story.
Mm. Of course.
Apologies. I can do my stand-up.
The reason
set
I said, of course,
this.
Is for anybody listening is because I once met Shreerupa at an open mic, which is a comedy open mic, and she made me watch a documentary she made about these children in villages, and there was so much tears in that video, and I'm so glad I saw it after my comedy open mic. But like, yeah, so let's get back to your.
Pratath was one of my very first audiences work.
Oh my god. Just too emotional, that video was.
Yeah. Right. So, this was in, I think, between 2008 to 2010.
Right.
I was a student social worker. And we used to do casework, which basically means talking to individual people who were going through some difficulty. And one of my clients was an 8-year-old boy who had sustained burns. Because his employer had poured hot water over him.
Ouch, okay.
And he was not talking to anyone, and I managed to break through him. And I got to know everything that had happened and the trauma that he had undergone. And like a good caseworker, I reported it. And as a result of my report, he was called in and requested to kind of help the police arrest this employer. And he came out of that and he hugged me around my waist and he cried. And he kept on telling me that I don't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to do this. I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back. And I appealed on behalf of him. And I was told that there are times that you have to do something for the greater good.
Mm-hmm.
And sorry, I'm tearing up. And I felt very defeated that day, extremely defeated, because I couldn't protect that child.
Right.
There is a system.
Because he had to leave, because that's how the system works.
That's how the system works. And right. You can't deny the fact that there were still children in employment of that person. And his reporting would help free people and probably prevent a lot of
more
this.
Of this to happen, yeah.
Yes. And that was probably one of the most difficult decisions that I had to take of standing aside.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt very powerless.
Right.
And I felt that I wasn't able to influence the system. And I felt very weak.
Yeah.
And I think that year was a watershed year for my life. Because a few months later, when there was a client of mine who passed away.
Oh.
And she passed away in the window of my being able to trace their family. So we didn't know where this client's family was. And I was struggling to trace. And this lady passed away right before I could trace the family. So between these two incidents, it kind of changed something in me fundamentally. And I just wanted to be this person who is able to use my articulation, who is able to influence systems and decision making.
Right.
For where systems work for the people.
Correct, yeah. So it was like a big trigger for you to say that this didn't happen this time, but like let it not keep happening.
Yes. Like that, I wanted to use the fact that I could communicate, that I'm somebody who is articulate.
Right.
And I'm extremely self-aware, so I know what I can do and what I can't. At least that's what I want to believe. My parents don't believe that.
No parents ever believe.
I swear. And I was like, so what's the most important thing? I mean, it's a human health.
Correct.
It's community health, it's people's health. And how do you navigate this message across so systems work for the poor?
Oh.
So that's
and then
where.
You just went and put one foot after another?
One foot after the other. And even when I took my sabbatical, I was still putting one foot after the other. That's the reason why I started studying media channels, to understand. And
to make anything that you can be more efficient.
Yes.
Or the most efficient way to do whatever you wanted to.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Nice. This is beautiful. I had fun talking to you, Shreerupa. I hope you did.
Yes, I did, Krita. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
It was tons of fun. But before we sign out, is there, if somebody wants to get in touch with you or has more questions, are you open to that? You can
absolutely
find Shreerupa on Twitter.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn.
So, of course, yay. All right, so do reach out to her if you have more questions about public health communication. And if you're interested in working in the field, go read up about it. There is so much that I just learned in the last 4 days of talking to you about this. So I'm guessing it's like a big black hole that a lot of us don't know much exists.
Yes.
All right, cool.
But this is more for the tribe, please. Yeah.
And that was the end of the episode. See you in another one. And that was another episode of the Walks of Life podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in. If you actually listened all the way till the end, hey, kudos to you for sticking around and being one of my loyal listeners. This was the end of the podcast. I'm trying and hoping to be more consistent hereafter. And I have some very interesting guests lined up in the weeks to come. So do stay hooked. And if you liked something on the podcast, do drop me a message on any of my social media platforms. I'm on all of them, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, of course, which everybody is on. So do drop me a message if you like something. If you didn't like something, then definitely drop me a message and let me know what you think so I can fix that. And I'm trying to go a long way with this podcast series. So thank you for being one of my listeners. You were amazing, and stay amazing. I'll see you in another episode in 2 weeks. This was the Walks of Life podcast. My name is Kuthar Srinivasan. Have a good day.